Well, hello everyone and welcome back. Today is Friday, October 10th, 2014. My name is Angela Walton-Raji and this is the African Roots Podcast. Remember, you can always reach me at africanrootspodcast@gmail.com. Well, everyone, how are you? Hope the week has gone well. And you know what? This is a really big week in the genealogy community, especially in the African American genealogy community. Two conferences are taking place as we speak. A shout out to everyone who is attending the annual conference of the Afro-American Historical and Genealogical Society. That's right, AAHGS.org. They are having their annual conference this weekend. It started last night in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. A lot of things are going on, and I want to actually thank people who have been sending me a few pictures. I have been putting some of them up, especially on Facebook. There is an OGS community group. Just go to facebook.com. I'll put a link for you to that community group and take a look at some of the pictures that have been shared. Last night was the State of the Society address. Tamla Tenpenny Lewis addressed the group. New pins for membership were distributed to brand new members. And I know that today the new attendees are having a gathering as well. So it looks like it's going to be an awful lot of fun. And I was not able to travel myself, so I'm not coming to you from Pittsburgh. Wish I was, but just too many other things were going on, and travel just couldn't take place, unfortunately. But there are people out there, just want to give a shout out to them, and I'm sure their conference is going to be very successful. And it's just really kind of neat to see that, you know, wow, this is what, 35th anniversary year? Wow. Just so nice to see that some things, once they are created, that they do carry on and that there is some longevity and continuity. So definitely shout out to everyone there who is having a very good experience. Certainly, I hope. I know some of the friends that we know from the blogging community are there. And so certainly excited that, you know, they are sharing things with us. Shelley Murphy's been sending pictures, videos as well, are going to be posted, I believe, later on today. So stand by for those. And also they will be placed on the YouTube channel. So a lot of things are going on. And meanwhile, our partners to the Midwest in Chicago, AAGHSC, which is the Afro-American Genealogical Historical Society of Chicago. Guess what? They're having a conference this weekend, too. So, oh my gosh, Michael Henderson's going to be speaking. You know, he's an award-winning author. And Melvin Collier, we know him from his blogs. We know him from his books. And he is also speaking there, as are a lot of other talented people. I have been to Chicago for their conference in the past as well. They're always producing something of interest and have just a good event. It's today and tomorrow in Chicago as well. I think it's at the Family History Center, I believe. And wow, lots of fun. And I'm just really thrilled to see that these two groups are, they're still doing their thing. And you know what, which is also, I think, is really good too. I mentioned that OGS, the National OGS group, AAHGS, this is their 35th anniversary year. Well, this group in Chicago is not that far behind. I believe this is year number 32 for them. They have been around for some time. So a hearty congratulations to both groups for, you know, hey, getting out there, producing something for the community itself. A shout out to all of you out there. It's just really kind of neat. Plus, there are other things that have been going on. I believe there's a group in Minnesota that's had its event that's going on. And, you know, hey, this is really fabulous. Okay, today is the 10th. Today's your deadline. You have until midnight tonight, Pacific time, to get in your proposals for the Southern California Genealogical Society Jamboree. They are accepting proposals for next June, and I'll send you a link where you can go. They had extended the call for presentations, and it goes through today, so make sure you get up, put your proposals in. You do have to go through their portal, which is an online link, to submit your data. But hey, get it in. You know, you never know. I think it could be something that's worthwhile. You may also just want to put it on your calendar. I mean, it's the Jamboree. Great time. I've been to it myself. And this is sort of, it's one of the big three. So, you know, they're getting ready for 2015. And 2015 is a milestone year. So I'm really, you know, happy to pass that on. If you're thinking of submitting, you live out west, take a look at it. Think of giving a presentation at the Jamboree. It's a fabulous event, and I encourage you to do that. And as I said, you have until tonight. Next weekend is the big genealogy event. The genealogy event, you're probably saying, well, what event? It's actually called the genealogy event, mind you. This is an event that takes place in New York City, downtown Manhattan, at the National Archives in New York City, the NARA at NYC in New York. Anyway, it's going to take place at the Custom House, the Hamilton U.S. Custom House downtown on a Bowling Green Square. And they're having a DNA day that's going to be part of it, and just a lot of things. So it's really, you know, across the weekend, next weekend, they're going to have a lot of things with not just presentations, but they're going to have some really focused talks, including DNA-focused talks as well. And you're going to get a chance to have some consultation time with some people who are considered authorities, people considered experts in their particular niche area. There's also going to be an exhibitor place. I'm not sure what's planned. I think there's some sort of event planned next Friday evening as well as some opportunities, research opportunities that they have at the National Archives in New York City. So it's just kind of a neat thing. I am happy to see that they are offering that. So this is called the genealogy event. Hey, go take a look at it. I think it might be something that you will enjoy. And wow, you know, if you live in New York City, why not? I certainly would be there. And I hope that, you know, you will take advantage of it as well. Now, I wanted to also mention later this month, another genealogy event for those in the greater Washington area. But even though it's a greater Washington, it really isn't. It's worldwide. It's the Virtual Genealogy Fair. That's right. Now, this is being offered through the National Archives out of Washington, but it's something that the whole world can participate in. It's the end of the month, so it's what, about 8 or 10 days away, a couple of weeks away. The very end of the month, 28th, 29th, and 30th, and it's going to start 10 a.m. Eastern time. Guess what? It's a virtual fair. Can't get better than that because the whole world can attend it. Live broadcasts online. You can ask the presenters all kinds of questions at the end of their presentation. And they're going to have presenters from all of the National Archives branches across the country and also from U.S. Citizen and Immigration Services. So I just think that is just really, really, really nice to see that. They're going to have a video stream every day. And this we're talking about Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, that last week in the month. And it's just really kind of a neat thing that you'll be able to watch those lectures and those presentations. Now, I do know some of the presenters, I think their schedules are already up, and some of you've heard them speak in the past. And just what it is, there will be an overall introduction to genealogy, how to preserve your personal records. Someone from College Park is presenting. And this is kind of neat for those of you who do work with immigration records, because many people have ancestors who came in from the Caribbean, from Jamaica, Trinidad, other parts of the West Indies. Well, some people don't always realize that there were some people who actually lost their citizenship as opposed to coming inward looking at citizenship. Some people, by marrying a person of another nationality, lost their citizenship. It's an interesting session on that. I think it's called When Saying I Do Meant That You Gave Up Your Citizenship. And of course, someone out of Kansas City is going to be talking about American Indian records and resources that are available there. So, you know, gosh, it's at least 4 workshops a day. So I'm really happy to see that that's going on. One, I think many people will be interested in really utilizing and learning a little bit more of the specifics pertaining to World War I draft cards. I think that's going to be on Wednesday of that week. Carol Petranek will be talking about using the Family Search website, and there's just a lot more. And we can all find our ancestors, regardless of their background, buried in some of these record sets and how to use them really, really clearly. Land records, federal land records. So many people have no idea that their ancestors were homesteaders. And I don't mean always the, when we think of homesteaders, we think of the little house on the prairie. But guess what? Some people didn't go as far as the prairie. They didn't go far out to Montana or Wyoming or the Great Plains. Some people were right there in southwest Oklahoma purchasing land, and they too were homesteaders. And fascinating things that are there. How to find some of those patent records and those federal land records. Good sessions for everyone. So the virtual fair is also coming up. I'm just really happy to see, you know, and of course I know it's almost November. So that means that yes, as October winds down, we are sort of getting into the end of the event season. There are things that are also going on tomorrow, Greater Baltimore area. There's going to be the event at the Family History Center in Essex, Maryland. A lot of good speakers that are there. I know many people are looking forward to hearing Noreen Goodson and others give some really good presentations. So, this is it. This is October. We're beginning that wind down. We're beginning that time now as the events are subsiding, as this weekend's conferences are coming to an end. People are going to get charged, get ready to come back home to start working on their own personal projects. And to actually address, when I say personal projects, but really sort of address the things that are captivating your attention, to say, hey, okay, now what do I do with this information? And of late, I've been involved with my own projects to kind of organize papers and things. And one of the things that I've come to become very cognizant of is projects and project management. And I might talk a little bit about that later. But this is the time now, as we're getting charged and getting inspired by the people we're meeting at these events, we also have to plan, okay, now what am I going to do for the next 6 months? As these next 6 months unfold, then what does that mean that is going to happen in terms of how I'm going to take this and apply it to my research, turn it into a project that does have a beginning, middle, and an end, and make it something that can be shared and presented. So things to think about anyway. Some news to share with you. This is an update for those with Virginia ties. Now, you have heard me in the past. I have spoken about a database called Unknown No Longer. And this is fascinating because it's a collaboration of several groups that have worked to provide data to the community, and particularly the research community and those with Virginia ties. Well, apparently there's some new slave records that are available through this database, Unknown No Longer. And I am putting a link for you up there so you can access it. It comes out of virginiahistorical.org site. But this is sort of the latest, I guess, step that the Virginia Historical Society has worked on to really provide access, or increased access, I believe they say it on their website, to increase access to their varied collections that really are reflecting Virginians of African descent. Now, as one of my close friends and colleagues often says, all roads lead to Virginia. In many cases, that does hold true. And there are many of us whose ancestors ended up in Tennessee and perhaps other parts of the Carolinas or even points further south and west, but their origins were Virginia. Well, it's been interesting because many ended up in Tennessee, later Mississippi, Arkansas, other parts of the Delta. They ended up in these places, but with those Virginia origins, sometimes through sale, through migration, through other things that would have led to their being transplanted. It has been one of those things that many people don't know. Well, they're from Virginia, but what's out there that might reflect what took them from Virginia to the place where they ended up being later, maybe Tennessee or parts further south. It's something I think that at a certain point in time, when we get up to that point where we're seeing that person who was of Virginia origin, and you've gotten that person maybe connected with others in that community, also of Virginia origin, the time comes to really say, maybe I can try and penetrate that a little bit. You have a full, maybe a handful of names that you're working with. How can I do this now to transplant them now back on Virginia soil to continue that research and that journey? And, you know, thankfully, Virginia Historical Society and others are part of that collaborative effort, people from the genealogy community, archaeological community, I think ODU, some people there as well. It's so good that they're all working together to put this out there. And I know that they have said, I think on their website, they have processed over 8 million items that they've been able to put up and digitize. So a whole lot of work. It's amazing to see that that's there, but also it's amazing to see that the commitment is there. Take a look, see if there's some things that may be of interest to you. It's not easy. It is not easy. It's just like finding the ancestor in 1870. You have no knowledge of life before that pertaining to the family. So what do? Go to the slave schedule? Maybe, maybe not. One has to learn how to approach slave schedules and to use them well, and to make sure that we're not being irresponsible or using some sort of faulty methodology when we look at them. And how do you deal with a document that has no names? And so, yeah, these are things to really think about. But these folks out of Virginia, they're giving us names. The hard part, yes, is to find that connection. And it's one of those things that I hope that if you've got Virginia ties, take a look. The database is wonderful. If you can at least pinpoint the community, and you may be telling the larger story, but your families and ancestors were part of that larger community. So sometimes the story is found there. Anyway, just want to let you know their database is expanding and glad to share that with you. I mentioned just now how sometimes we look at the community and sometimes the answers to some of our family questions might be found to a different degree on the landscape of the community. Well, we have to appreciate the work that historians do and how they tell a story of a community. And I was so excited to hear last night, I listened to Dr. Amitra Chakrabarthy, who is a woman of color who's written a poignant book looking at free women of color in antebellum Charleston, South Carolina. Well, last night on Bernie Spinnett's show, Research at the National Archives and Beyond, her guest really went into amazing detail about not just what was happening to women who were free people of color, but she explored a part of history that is often not explored enough, in my opinion anyway. The show was focusing on the work of Dr. Chakrabarthy Myers, called Forging Freedom. And I guess I always find that sometimes when authors come on and really share their work, I sort of say describe, but really sort of share their work, there are different perspectives that we want to listen. You have to listen with kind of two different kinds of ears. One is to listen to the content of what they're saying. How interesting. You found this, you found that. People had this happen to them. Other circumstances affected them. And that data is put there. But then there's the second ear in which you must listen. And that second ear involves, I think, I guess the part that inspires. And for me, the inspiration was to listen not just to what was going on to free women of color, but at the beginning when she really asked her guest, how did you focus on Charleston? How did you decide to do that as opposed to New Orleans or Baltimore or other cities? And she explained a great amount of that, and it made me think. It was my moment of inspiration. What do I mean? She talked about the fact that, well, you know, a lot has been looked and researched and documented, and the stories have been told from the perspective of what happens to people in New Orleans. A lot has been done on other kinds of communities, but women in antebellum Charleston, there's never been anything like that that's ever been done. I also admired when she talked about her research process just a little bit, how many months she spent in Charleston, how many weeks she spent also at the Avery Institute or at the Archives, State Archives in Columbia, South Carolina. I was very, because she had to get her hands the primary sources to those wills and those documents. And I guess I was very, very touched because it was that moment of inspiration, that moment when I realized, oh my goodness, she took an area, and this is an area not related to her, but it's an area that's an academic interest for her. She's a historian. And so she decided, I need to go to Charleston. I need to transplant myself there, and I need to find out what it's about. And she sort of looked, it's sort of an objective spirit, but also a sense of telling the story that's not been told. It made me reflect. My moment of inspiration actually came because as she spoke, I began to suddenly think, oh my gosh, you know what? No one has ever looked at the plight of women enslaved in Indian Territory. That's one of my family areas, as many of you know. My folks were slaves in the Choctaw Nation in the eastern part of the territory. People are beginning to write about it now, just a little bit. People are beginning to tell that story right now. But one of the things that I talk about whenever I just mention the freedmen in general and how many people were given that classification at the end of the 19th century, oh, about 14,000. And thankfully, these records have been digitized very, very well. You can find them on Fold 3, Ancestry, and other places. But what about their plight? What was their story? I listened to the broadcast some more, and she talked about what freedom was really like for women, for families, for people of color in general, what that freedom was like. And she defines them. But then I thought, we had free people also in the territory. We did not have many. We had less than 1,000. But they were right there, right next door, literally, to slave state Arkansas, directly north of slave state Texas, directly northwest of slave state Louisiana. But here was Indian Territory. Now, a majority of the black people in Indian Territory were enslaved by the five tribes that took their slaves with them. But there were several hundred, not thousands, but there were several hundred. I have counted them and have found free families of color living in slaveholding Cherokee Nation, slaveholding Choctaw Nation, slaveholding Creek and Seminole Nations. Not many in Chickasaw country, unfortunately. But in those four tribes, who are these free families? They're living around all these other families that have African people as slaves. What was life like there? That was the moment of inspiration. Oh my God, nobody's written about this. Taya Miles, MacArthur Fellow, brilliant woman. She wrote about the Shoeboots family and the African Cherokee people. Gloria Naylor, Gloria Naylor, is that her name? Celia Naylor, pardon me, has written about also Cherokee slaves and their experience. Nothing to date ever written really about free people, and certainly nothing about Choctaw, Chickasaw, Seminole Creek experience from the perspective of people being free. Thankfully, there has been a lot of scholarship on Creek and Seminole freedmen, and we have the scholarship of Dr. Daniel Littlefield in terms of what he has done with at least four of the five tribes in terms of the freedmen experience. But I really began to think about it and say, wow, look at this. This story hasn't been told yet. Can I do it? Ooh, I'm not sure. I'm not sure I have that skill set, but I do have the familiarity with the people, with the communities, with the records that are there, and with some of the resources that could provide a glimpse into other things that have happened over the years. So yeah, I was inspired last night listening to Bernice's guest who was writing about Charleston. It made me stop and think, maybe I do need to write about my father's ancestral home in what is now Oklahoma, but maybe tell that story differently. No one has written about that. It's an awesome task, and I'm not convinced necessarily that I have the skill required for it, but I do realize the need to tell it. The lesson I hope that you all glean is that you all come from different families, work experiences, you're bringing different skill sets to what you do as a genealogist, but you come from different communities as well. If your people are from the coastal Carolinas, well, there's a story there. There's a community story there. There's a regional story, which is part of the national story. If your people were homesteaders out in the Midwest, whether it was Kansas, Missouri, Nebraska, or parts farther west, tell that story. Were your people early urbanites? Were they Chicago planted people in the 19th century? Were they in New England or New York before the Civil War? This is a story that has to be told. What was the experience like for them as people of color? What was the story like for women? What was the story as they began to forge their way and form their institutions, their schools, their churches, their businesses? All these are opportunities. So it was like one of sort of a just an aha moment, a moment of inspiration. Listen to the story. Listen to the broadcast. The archived version is online. And listen with two ears. Hear the content of what she was saying. And then let it inspire you to turn back to your background, whether you're coming straight from the Mississippi Delta. Something led them to sing the blues from the Delta. Some of those stories, and the Delta stories are varied. You've got the story on the Arkansas side, you've got the story on the Mississippi side, you've got the story on the Louisiana part, but they're all part of the larger fabric. And I was just so inspired. Tune in, listen to it. That's sort of the effect that the show had on me. And you know, her show airs every week, Thursday night at 9 p.m. Tune in. By the way, tune in next week. Yes, my moment of shameless self-promotion. It's going to be a rebroadcast of my interview with her on researching Native American ancestry. I will be live in the chat room to answer some of your questions as well. So I do hope that you will tune in next Thursday at 9 p.m. and listen to that broadcast. I had a lot of fun when I was making that tape, but I will be there live to answer your questions too. And I guess also I want to just encourage you to look at some of your projects that have captivated your attention, your time, excuse me, your interest right now. I mentioned project management a little bit more as I've been going through my own exercises of organizing things up late. And I will simply say that I come to realize that many of us stop short. And when I say stop short, we acquire things, we're excited. We collect it, we go spend a week in an archives and come back with tons of paper. And that's it. We come back with tons of paper. But what do we do with it? I think one of the things that I've come to realize is the value of creating a goal. Here's a set of records. What's your goal with this particular collection? Well, you know what? That collection, as opposed to becoming another set of items in a large pile of papers, when you start to get that pile of papers and it starts to accumulate and suddenly becomes clutter. Well, as someone I was watching recently, I believe on a YouTube video, made a statement. You know, sometimes clutter, that accumulation of things that you have all together in that pile, which we have lots of piles of paper, these become uncompleted or no, delayed. These become delayed decisions. So when we come back from that archives and we have that collection of data from that Civil War file, let's not get so excited that suddenly we forget that there's a task at hand. If we have accumulated the story of this paper, then we've got to turn that into the project that has, well, the beginning was the acquisition of it, but we never move beyond the acquisition. We don't turn it to the middle and then the end, whether that end product is a piece that we write on our blog or our family newsletter or maybe a booklet that we put together on this particular person's life. We should see what we're doing is working on projects. And sometimes each little project maybe is a separate chapter. Maybe it is a small independent project in and of its own. But let's remember that we're creating projects every time we collect a new set of papers. And we need to start to now finish the many projects. When you get to the point now where you're looking for stories that attract your attention, and sometimes it's no longer accumulating more data on the family line, because we know it's ongoing, that's sort of a lifelong journey, but let's don't forget the project, and let's start to address the project. I realize now that I have to see so many of my accumulations and many of my piles as projects that need to have some structure, that need to have, yes, not just that beginning, which was acquiring that paper, but that middle and that end, and to put it in some order. The people for whom are about whom we've been looking and studying and reading and maybe writing here and there, they deserve that story to be completed. They deserve that project to be completed. I just really think that we need to think of ourselves differently as we're approaching our task at hand. And wow, on that note, look at the time. It has passed by so quickly. I'm not going to take up too much more because I know you are just as busy as I, and many of you are a lot busier. So thank you. Thank you so much for being there, for listening, for tuning in. You are appreciated. And thanks for sending me some of those announcements. And keep those of you in Chicago, those of you in Pittsburgh, keep those pictures coming. I am putting them up on Facebook. So go and take a look and enjoy. There's some videos that are going to be posted a little bit later today. Come and enjoy those as well. And thank you. Thank you for being there. I love hearing from you. And yeah, time to get back to those projects. Go through those piles, those accumulations of papers. Go through them and turn them into the projects, organize them, get them cataloged, categorized, and just do what we have to do, because all of that is part of course, that entire effort to document, to tell the story. And of course, to do what we do continually. And of course, I want you to do that again. And you know what that is, to continually keep researching, keep documenting, and yes, keep sharing what you find. Have a great week, everyone, and have a great time out there at those conferences. Let us all hear what's going on. Anyway, everyone, have a great week. Take care, be well, and be safe, and I'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.